You're listening to the Study Clicks podcast, your number one source for junior and leaving cert tips. We make exams easier.
Welcome back to the first episode of the Study Clicks podcast of 2021. Myself and Emer are back again. But we're recording this a week ahead of the CAO deadline for 2021, so we decided to get a special guest on, an expert in the CAO and a career guidance counsellor, Mr. Donnacha O'Mahony. Donnacha, welcome to the podcast again.
Girls, thank you so much for having me back again. I really enjoyed the last time. It was a lovely chat, and I'm looking forward to this one too.
That's great. Yeah, you were so well, and we got such great feedback, because the last podcast that we had you on, we recorded back in August, obviously ahead of the results, and they were the strangest, or like the results like never before. So it was a very interesting chat, and again
the never ending Leaving Cert 2020, and it still seems to be going on.
And
you know, no results till February now, you know, so it's, I feel bad for that 2020 cohort, and hopefully 2021 will be a bit more organized this year.
We hope so. Yeah, a crazy time for all of us, but anything that we can do to make students feel a bit more reassured, or give them the answers to the questions that they have. Emer's here as well. I feel like Emer should say something. She hasn't spoken yet.
Hi. Hi everyone who's listening. Yeah, it's kind of your traditional podcast. You still have me and Nessa, your host, but like Nessa said, we have Donnacha here as well. And you can also find Donnacha over at his original podcast, Leaving Cert Guidance. And also has a wonderful Instagram with plenty of career guidance tips to find. So definitely go check that out and give him a follow. Even if it's past the CAO date, you'll get lots of stuff there all year round to help you get through the uncertainty and confusion that tends to be the Leaving Cert. So this I suppose we had to preface this particular podcast saying that although it's about filling out your CAO form and getting it in before the deadline, the original deadline is already passed, so many of you might have already filled out your CAO form at this point, but there's still plenty of tips and stuff in this podcast about how to fix it and amend it later on, and you'll still find plenty of valuable tips. So regardless of your CAO journey, keep tuning in. There'll be stuff for you on this podcast.
Perfect. So we're going to start off with asking Donnacha the questions. We have actually done a CAO podcast before, but we are far from experts. So we're delighted to have Donnacha on to actually tell us.
Yeah, we should delete that podcast. It's shameful.
Don't listen to it. Actually, I never brought it up. But the very first question is, we'll just get as basic as possible, because I'm sure there are people out there, and especially now when people aren't in school. But Donnacha, how do you fill out the CAO form? How do you do that?
Yeah, and I always try to say to students that it's actually okay if you don't know, because this is your first time ever going through this. It's easy for me because I go through it every single year with students. So there's no reason why you should or shouldn't know it. And if you do, it's absolutely fine. Just seek out some help if you don't know it. But I suppose if you're really unsure, there's actually a CAO demo application that you can do. And it's on the CAO website. So you just even type into Google CAO demo application, and you can try out a few different things and see what works and what doesn't work. Since it went online, CAO is more or less all online now. It's pretty hard to make a mistake. When I was doing my CAO, you literally had to get a CAO form, get the codes, write them out in pen. Sometimes the codes were wrong and you didn't get a choice for that, and you were wondering, God, I got the points. I wonder why, because you had the wrong code down or something.
No.
But now, if you put in a wrong code into the CAO, it comes up in big red letters that that's the wrong code, or it'll come up beside it what the course is. So it's pretty hard to get wrong. It's a fairly easy system now. It used to be harder. So when I did it, 1st of February was the full deadline. That was it. You had to get it in by the 1st of February. You had to walk to the post office with your bank draft as well, and post it off hand in your bank draft and all that. But now it's so much easier. Debit card, all online. So it's like, it's try the demo application if you're unsure, but it's pretty easy. It's very self-explanatory what you have to do. But even Emer, what you were saying there, that a lot of people might have their CAO form filled out. Most students, by the 20th of January, all they have to do is open up the account, get your CAO number, and that's it. And actually the majority of students don't start filling out their any courses on their list until the change of mind facility opens up in May, June. I was chatting to Eileen Kelligan the other day from CEO, and she was saying you wouldn't believe the amount of students who leave their list blank until May, June, and then they start getting courses in. Because she was, her tip was kind of like, you know, get some courses down in February instead of leaving it.
Some good name dropping there, Donica. Eileen from the CEO on the CEO podcast. It's as good as you get. That's interesting. So you don't actually have to put in any... I was under the impression that you had to put down something.
No, you don't have to put down anything at all. Now, if you're applying for a restricted course, the 1st of February is the deadline. So like restricted might be medicine because you're doing a HPAT test. It might be music in case you have to do an audition or drama. It might be art or architecture if you have to do a portfolio. Some courses might have an interview or an extra application form, like Adelaide Nursing in Trinity College always have that extra form. So you just have to really sure that you're not applying for a restricted course. And if you're not, you can leave a blank. But if you are, make sure. And even if you're not sure about putting down a restricted course, oh, I'm not sure if I want to do art in NCAD, I'd say put it down anyway before the 1st of February, because when the change of mind opens up, you can always take it out. Mm. You can't add it back in, but you can take it out. So if you're not sure about restricted courses, just put them down anyway.
Okay. And you mentioned the HPAT. We might come back to that later for anyone who's listening and is thinking of doing the HPAT. But you, so you were saying there that both yourself and Eileen would recommend putting something down. Aside from the restricted courses where there's the obvious benefit to putting it down, what would be any, the advantage otherwise? If you're just not sure yet, like what's the difference between putting something down now and waiting until May?
So what's very interesting is that before the end of May, you get sent out a statement of application from the CAO. Again, that used to come in the post, but last year they obviously had to email it, and I think it's going to be emailed again this year. So what's on that statement of application is your leave insert number, your date of birth, and then if you have put down courses, they're just saying, is this what you want to put down? Is that your leave insert number? Is that your date of birth? Make sure everything is correct. Because if anything is wrong with it, you won't get your offers, even if you make the requirements. And it, you know, that's your job for the statement of application. That's the CEO saying to you, just check that we have all our details correct. And if they're correct, fine, you don't have to get onto them at all. But if they're wrong, to get straight onto them. So I suppose that's kind of the only reason you might put a few down. Some people like to put them down and then not think about it until after the leaving cert is over. Because you can still change after the leaving cert. So it's like, okay, I don't have to think about that now until I'm finished. Then you might decide, God, the leaving cert went way better than I thought. I actually might put down this course I didn't think I was going to get.
Is that why the change of mind is there, actually? Is that how it came about?
Yeah, more or less. Because it was kind of unfair, like I was saying to you, the 1st of February, that was it, done and dusted. I think you maybe could have paid extra to use the change of mind before. This is a long, long time ago. This isn't recent since I did my leaving cert. But yeah, I'd say that's the reason, is to give more people an opportunity to change their mind if needs be.
Brilliant. I might just touch a little bit on this, on the change of mind, even though we might actually do another podcast all about that. When is it and does it cost anything?
Yeah, so it opens up on the 5th of May. So the CEO more or less closes the 1st of February until the 5th of May. And the reason for that is they want to get all those assessments done during that time. And then the 5th of May opens back up right up until the 1st of July. It doesn't cost anything to do a change of mind. In fact, you can change your mind as many times as you like during that period. It's not like you only get one or two opportunities. You can take loads in and out, whatever you feel like. You can play around with it. So it's a really good time. And even the 1st of February to the 5th of May is a good time maybe to do some research on different courses and maybe get them onto your list.
So what can students do? Because I was looking at the CAO website earlier, and they have the different dates on their calendar and things. And they've mentioned something about after the 5th of February that you can amend it. What's that about?
Yeah. So the 5th of February until about the 1st of March, you can actually put on a restricted course, even though the 1st of February was the deadline. Now, it's going to cost you to put on that restricted course. It's only €10. But it's just kind of if people forgot, genuinely forgot.
So that's just for restricted courses. It's not like you... Because I kind of thought there might be, if I was reading that, it's a bit vague on the website. I thought if I was reading that and I thought, okay, I changed my mind from the applied languages course I put on, I need to change that now after the 5th. But it's, you're saying it's just the they're searchable.
Yeah, it's just restricted because there'll be no need to change your mind between February and May, because you'll get the opportunity to do it after the 5th of May for free as well.
Okay.
So yeah, so the 5th of February to the 1st of March, if you wanted to get your restricted course down, or if you've had a change of heart or something, there's still an opportunity there to get it down.
Excellent. The next point I'll bring on to you, and I'd say it is your favorite thing to talk about, is the order of genuine preference. Do you put down your dream course first, even though it seems out of reach?
Yeah, I was saying to you guys before I came on that there was a Twitter comment that he must get sick of talking about genuine order of preference. But yeah, that's the bread and butter. But it is so important. And if you don't know what genuine order of preference is, it's really, really important to get the courses down in the order that you want to be offered them. So it's kind of like, and I said it in the StudyClicks video that we did during the summer, it's kind of like, forget about the points for the first few courses. Whatever your dream courses are. So I always say 3 dream courses. Whatever you want to do, get them down number 1, 2, and 3, whatever option you want them on. And then the next 5 courses, I always say they should be your probable courses. I'm probably going to get these points to get these courses. And then your last 2 should always be your backup courses, I always think. And backup courses should be something like 100, 150 points below what you generally get. Just in case, you don't know what would happen during the Leaving Cert. You might not feel well, or something might happen. You might sleep out for an exam or something. You just don't know. So it's always good to have a backup option there. And the reason for genuine order of preference is you can always go up on your CAO list, but you can never go down on your CAO list. So for example, say you were offered your 3rd choice. From number 4 right down to number 10, they're gone off your list on the computer. You'll never be able to get those. So people who say, God, I actually would have preferred my 4th choice, but I didn't put it down ahead of my 3rd choice, you'll never get that course. Unless it comes down to available places, you won't get that course. So you can't get it. Now, you can always go up, so you can be offered your 2nd course or your 1st course in subsequent rounds, but you can never be offered. And the amount of kids every year who say, God, I'd have preferred my 5th place to my 3rd place, I should have. So that's where the genuine order of preference comes in. Because you can't, even though you might have the points for your 5th place, doesn't matter. You can't be offered that because it's lower.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I feel like in terms of motivating yourself and wanting to study and everything, it's just a good thing to put, even if you think it's unrealistic for yourself to put something that's maybe 100 points out of your usual point range. If you have that on the top of your list and you're going, you still have whatever, 4 or 5 months to go, it's great for motivating yourself, because if you had never put it there in the first place, you're like, oh, look, I didn't even put it on my list, so I'm not going to try. I'm just going to do what I usually do. If you have it on your list and you're like, okay, well, now it's actually a possibility, so I'm going to try harder, and you know, I have it down now, so I might as well try. I think that would definitely push me, at least, if yeah. I had a goal to work towards, and absolutely, it would push me a lot further.
Absolutely, go for it. Look, there is 10 places on your CEO form, and you have the opportunity to fill those places, like the first couple of places, with, like you were saying, there were courses that you thought were out of your grasp. But yeah, it'll be an excellent goal. If it's 500 points and you generally get 450, look, I'm really going to try and push myself for those last 50 points. Why not? And yeah, believe it and you can achieve it. Isn't that the famous mantra?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something about seeing it written down as well. Like, when it's in your mind, it doesn't seem real. But if you see it on the page, you're like, actually, maybe?
Yeah.
Has a huge effect.
You know, that's what they say. They say if you write your goals down, or start saying them out loud, you're statistically more likely to achieve those goals. So yeah, even getting it down your CEO, saying, you know, this is an opportunity for me now.
Motivation and CEO tips, we are giving the listeners a bag for their buck with this episode. You're welcome.
Tony Robbins, watch out.
And the next thing I'll ask you is something that you definitely get a lot, and I'd say people are really specific in, like, oh, do you think this course is likely to go up in points, or what the points will be for this year? And I was actually researching before this podcast, what are the most asked questions about the CAO? And it is points. It's like, will it go up? Will it go down? And when we had you on to do the videos with Aoife, you had a really good explanation for how the points work, because it can be confusing and people, they don't, it's never really explained to them. So can you explain how the points work every year? How they go up and down?
You're right. It's really confusing. There's so much people think they need to know about the CAO. And the way points work is, because often I used to think that it was universities setting a benchmark that if you don't get over 450 points, you're not going to get this course. But that's not how it works. So say, for example, a course has 20 places. The person who gets the first place on that will be the person who applied for the course and got the most amount of CEO points. So maybe the first person who gets that place has 600 points. The second place is given to the person who's applied for the course and got the second most amount of points. And we fill up all those 20 places right down through the points of those who've applied for the course. And the 20th place, because we've only got 20 places in our course, that's the points. The person who got in on that 20th place, say they were 20 down the list and maybe got 450 points, that's what the points are going to be for that course, 450 points. So it means the very last person who got a place on that course, that's how many points they got. So when you see the points in the newspaper, the day of the offers, that's what that means.
Never knew that.
I went through all of school and I never knew that. It's just crazy that information is.
You're just told like it has to be high for the most popular courses. And I just, yeah, it never clicked with me.
I just accepted that,
all the medicine students are getting 625.
Well, a lot of the most popular courses actually have a small amount of places. Like if you look at some of the top courses in Trinity and UCD, they all only have about 20, 25 places. Where if you look at actually the most popular course on the CEO, so the most applied for course in the CEO and the most first preferences is actually Arts in Maynooth University. And that's only, it was only 318 points last year. And it's because they have 1,500 places.
Wow.
So that's why the points are quite low. So often it can be misleading. You can kind of see the amount of places on a course maybe will tell you that it's probably going to be very popular.
And that this might be like a scary hypothetical, but hypothetically, could have, with that in mind, like a course could go up by like 100 points, say if like people who applied for it got all over 600 kind of a thing. So
yeah, and that's happened, you know, a good few. Like it does happen regularly. Like say during the recession here in Ireland, points for engineering courses went down an awful lot because nobody wanted that kind of construction industry, say civil engineering and things like that. So points went down a lot and then have creeped back up the last few years. Generally, when the economy is uncertain, the courses where you have, where you're qualified in something at the end of it, where you have a career at the end of it, start to get really high.
Yeah.
The likes of dentistry, the likes of nursing, the likes of teaching, where you're guaranteed your career when you come out of it. The points for those generally go up when the market, the economy is not stable. And then when it is stable, you start to see the likes of arts and things like that start to go higher and higher, where people want to pursue what they really like rather than looking for a career. So it's interesting.
That makes
when you see
sense.
When you see the labour market trends, it's really interesting.
That is interesting. There was another thing I was going to ask on that note, that say like if you wanted to do nursing in UCC, is there a way that you can see the patterns of the points down through the years to know what the average is? Is there a way of finding that out or looking it up?
Yeah, so Qualifacts.ie, it's brilliant. So Qualifacts.ie is a state-run website for Leaving Cert students, and it's really excellent. But no matter what course you look up, it gives you a huge amount of detail, and it'll also show you the points for the last 3 years. And the last 3 years is probably significant enough. You don't really need to delve back into the last 10, 15 years.
Right.
The last 3 years will give you a better idea. But Qualifacts.ie, if you look up any course in that, at the very end of all the detail, you'll see the points from the last few years.
Excellent. Qualifacts is definitely one to be bookmarked for six-year students.
Yeah, I think so. Like it has, it's not a flash website. It's very, it's literally a white background and black writing on it a lot. But it's so informative. I can understand, like I love it, but I've guidance counselors friends who really don't like it. They prefer Careers Portal maybe.
Oh, right.
But I just think Qualifacts is just a matter of fact. And I loved just getting straight to the
point. No messing.
Exactly.
Okay, so, you know, we've kind of been talking about students there that know what they want to do if they know that they have nursing in mind or whatever. But I imagine a lot of students, and definitely myself and Nessa, when we were at that stage in school, would have been the same, that we have no idea. And maybe at this point kind of feel under pressure. Okay, the heat is on now. I need to get my act together, but I still haven't a clue what to put down or where to look. What would you recommend to the lost souls?
Yeah, there's loads of things. When I meet the lost souls, the first question I would ask them is, what subject do you love in school? And why do you love that subject? What is it about it that you like? And then I'll say, what subject do you hate in school? And they generally have one they dislike. And why do you dislike that? So then we'll start to look at subjects where they have similar trends to the subject you do like. And so say they absolutely hate maths. Well, I'm not going to start looking at science courses and data science and computer science, engineering, where there's a huge amount of maths. We'll tend to stay away from that. And if they love things like history, okay, well, let's look at some arts courses or, you know, sometimes history students love law and things like that. So they're more kind of verbal orientated degrees rather than numerical. So that's kind of what I tend to do. I tend to say to students, try not to focus on what your career is going to be at the end. Lots of students, if I ever mention an arts degree, they'll say, well, look, what can I do at the end of that? There's lots of things you can do. It's not like there's a massive queue of arts graduates on the unemployment line outside social welfare offices. That's not the case. There's hugely transferable skills that you can get from an arts degree that lots of employers are looking for. Maybe you studied a language, maybe you studied politics, economics as part of your arts. And they have massive transferable skills like problem solving, critical thinking, communication, presentation skills, teamwork skills. And they'll probably take you into a graduate program and say, okay, you've learned these skills in college. We want you to have our applicants to have a level 8 degree, but now this is kind of what we want to add to your skill set. So I always say, if you're really passionate about something, like I loved history in school. But a lot of people just said to me, well, you're going to become a history teacher.
Yeah.
No, I did become a history teacher, but there were people on my degrees who ended up not becoming history teachers. There's so many. Like a good friend of mine from the degree, he runs a senator's office here in Ireland and stuff like that. So like, there's loads of opportunities from different degrees. But I always say focus on what you're really passionate about and try not to figure out what the career is going to be. I love the you know, Charlie Maskey started doing these paintings with a horse, a boy, and a fox, you know this one?
Mm.
And he had a really good one the other day where the boy said, I can't see where we're going. And the horse said, well, can you see your next step? And the boy said, yes. He said, just take that. And I put that exactly the same with students as well. Try not to focus too far down the line. See what the next step is going to be. Try not to worry about the career.
Yeah.
I love that.
I think we talked about that in the last podcast as well, because I was saying that for me personally, it's always like just focus on a point in the future where it's no longer a worry for you. And then you came back with something similar like that. And I think it was because after you had kids that it was a lot easier to just focus on the here and now.
Yeah.
So I suppose it depends on your own worldview. But I think that one actually does make more sense in kind of thinking into the future, where everything, especially now with the pandemic, everything is so uncertain. Just putting one foot in front of the other and getting the next step ahead of you is definitely enough.
And the adventure is great. Like, you don't need to know at 18, you don't need to have your life laid out for you. The adventure is great in kind of not knowing what you're going to do, but just take each step as it comes.
Yeah, and exactly. I think nowadays, like, I think before, and especially I'd say a lot of parents would maybe be projecting this onto the current students and their children, because in their day it was, you know, you do one job and that's it for life. Whereas
exactly.
I think students nowadays do need to realize that you can change jobs 20 times before you retire, and that's completely fine and that's completely realistic in today's world. So you don't have to freak out about trying to find a job that's perfect for you right away. You have loads of time. Third level education is a lot more accessible than it was. So you could go back to college if you don't find the right thing straight away, that there's no huge pressure to find the perfect thing right now. It's very hard to find your passion at 18. Like,
exactly. And the degree, the undergraduate degree you're going to do, is it's really the foundation of lifelong learning that you're going to do.
Yeah.
Like, I've done 3 masters since I left college, and you know,
wow.
and that's and none of them paid me any more than if I didn't do them. So they cost me a lot of money. But it is, I ended up loving college. I wasn't overly mad about school, but I loved college. I loved third level, and right up to my last one that I did, I absolutely loved it. And that's the way you see your degree. It's only the start of where you're going to go.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's it.
That's great advice.
Yeah, I love that. Don't focus on the career, because it's like the next 3 or 4 years, that's what you're going to be doing. So look at the courses and really think about what is your interest, and does that course, is this something you'll enjoy doing for 3 or 4 years? That's so important.
Yeah, and there's so many jobs now today that weren't even invented 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, I know a transition year student last year who got work experience because she wrote down on her CV that she was really skilled in all types of social media. And the company she applied for were actually really keen on that skill. Even though she just knew how to upload on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, whatever, the company had these social media outlets and platforms and didn't know how to use them. So they literally brought her in for a week and said, just overthrow our whole social media platform and do what you can do. And so young people have a lot more skills than they think that they have. Like, you, I think more transitioners, most transitioners wouldn't put down that they're, you know, really skilled at social media when they are. Yeah. So you have more skills than you think you have. And that's what I mean. So jobs that weren't, like, there was no social media managers 5 years ago. So by the time you finish your degree, there could be so many jobs that weren't even in existence when you started your degree. You know?
There was no there was no Study Clicks podcast host 5 years ago, but look at us now.
Well, do you know, there was no Google when I was in college, would you believe
how
that?
How did you survive?
How did you learn? Yeah. How did you get from A to B?
Would you believe I read books?
What are books?
Yeah.
Whole of the world.
You read books.
That's so funny.
Google was like 2006. I think I finished my degree in 2006.
That's not that
we'll
long
let, we'll let our listeners guess your age.
Yeah. Do the maths yourself there. That's funny. I was just thinking when you were saying that, I have a friend who works in a pretty high up in a library, but she's one of the youngest members of staff, and they have her as their marketing genius because she knows how to upload a Facebook photo. This is Saib. She's the marketing whiz. So, like, it depends on where you're working. You could be considered a genius just from the generation that you were brought up in.
Absolutely. And it is a skill, because you see now, even with the pandemic, everything has gone online now. Everything is online. School is online. Retail is online. Everything's online. So it's, if you have that skill, and most people don't, most people of a certain generation don't. So really consider yourself quite skillful in certain areas. Mm. And I think young people do tend to say, well, you know, I'm not really good at anything. I haven't done anything yet. You're more skilled than you think you are.
Absolutely.
That's good. I hope that's life affirming for the people, because I know it can be so stressful. Like, on top of everything else, people are, and relatives would be asking you as well, like, oh, what you want to do after school? And you're like, I don't know. Please stop asking.
Yeah.
It's the worst time of year for it as well. It's like the time of year that's all your relatives ask you. Oh, do you know what you're doing yet?
Yeah. You'd nearly be dreading going to the communions. You'd nearly be glad they aren't on at the moment. Yeah.
Some of my most interesting friends are in their 40s and still don't know what they want to do. You know, I always think people who don't want to know are really interesting people.
It's funny. Anyway, so we're talking there about different, I suppose we focused there a bit on third level and, you know, the joys of college and all that, but that's not the only option, obviously. And I know on our last podcast, when we had you on, Donica, we talked a good bit about PLCs and how fantastic they can be. So we won't talk too much about it because we've already done a bit on it. But maybe just a quick refresher on if you're thinking of a PLC at this point, what are your next steps?
Well, the PLC open days, virtual open days, start now, more or less kind of the end of January. So if you want to apply for a PLC, you apply directly to the College of Further Education themselves. It's not done through CAO. And so many people get confused in that, say, I can't find the PLC section on the CAO. Ah. It's a different application. Apply directly to the College of Further Education. Now, Simon Harris does want to put that all under the one umbrella, where you can apply for apprenticeships and PLCs and college all in the one. So we'll see how that goes. But so it's now you would do it. They do interview you. You could actually apply for it as a backup option. You could be offered a place in the course. You could accept it. They don't tell this to many principals in College of Further Education, but come August, if you do get your choice that you want in university, you could say, actually, I'm not going to take that place. So, you know, there's always that opportunity as well. It's a good plan B for some people. It's a good plan A for some people. Some people don't want college. They want to be skilled in something where they could take a job straight afterwards. Mm. PLCs are good for that. PLCs are also good for a different entry route into college. Like, I think about 4,000 QQI applicants, that's what they're called, applied to the CAO last year and got offered places. So it's another entry route into third level as well.
Okay. And I think it, like, tying into our last point about if you don't know what you want to do yet, it's also a good option for that, that you could just, if you don't want to waste a year in college not knowing what you want to do, you can just do that for a year and see, are you interested in one of the PLC options?
Absolutely. I always say that, because you'll do work experience in the area that you're thinking about doing. Like, I know people have done lab techniques in PLCs and figured out, God, science is not for me. Mm. Or did nursing and then did a work experience. That's definitely not for me. So you're absolutely right. Because I have a good friend of mine who did primary school teaching for 4 years and qualified, and 6 weeks into his first job, he said, this job isn't for me. So he left it and went to run a nightclub, which is very different from primary school teaching. Yeah, but so it does. It gives you that option to try it for a year and not kind of, as you were saying, waste 4 years almost doing a degree that you're not sure about. And I always think it's a brilliant transition year from second level to third level, because it's a huge jump and it's a really different jump. Mm. You know, there's so much independent learning in third level that you don't really have in second level. And it equips you with the skills, how to write essays, how to do presentations, all of these different things that you don't learn in secondary school that would be very valuable for third level.
Yeah, it can be quite overwhelming otherwise.
We definitely need to big up PLCs so much more. I felt like they've got such a bad rap when I was in school. It's like, oh, if you don't do well in the Leaving Cert, you'll have to do a PLC. But like, they sound amazing. That shouldn't be like a bad thing. They sound really class, to be fair.
And I know a student of mine previously did an animal science PLC. She didn't want to go to college, didn't like college, didn't like the idea of it. And part of her animal science PLC was dog grooming. And she loved it so much that her and her mum opened a dog grooming parlor after she finished her PLC.
That's amazing.
That's so cool. And like, I think the thing that stood out for me there was like work experience and finding out whether you like it or not, because that rings true so much for me. I remember in TY, we had 2 weeks of work experience where you chose two different places to go to. And for my first week, I went to this, I loved home ec. So like, I was kind of following your advice. What do you love in school? And I loved home ec. So I was like, I need to be a nutritional scientist. And I went to this lab where they were, I think it was baby food they were making or something like that. And I was testing, I was in some lab. I had to put on, I think, 4 different Hamza suits. Half my day was putting on suits and taking off suits. And then I spent the day just sitting in this tiny little lab, putting teeny pieces of powder on the weighing scales and seeing how much protein was in it or whatever. I can't remember now what it was, but I hated it. I absolutely hated it. And I was like, thank God I had this nightmare of a week so that I didn't have to have a nightmare of a life when I did my nutritional science course and hated it for the rest of my life. So there's so much value in getting work experience if you're not sure yet that's like, if you're not sure what you're applying for in college is really for you, consider the PLC and think, can I just have a year of it to get a feel for it instead of committing to it for a longer period of time?
You're absolutely right. And I always say to students, if you hated your work experience, put it down as a positive, because I know that's not for me. So I always say work experience, if you don't like it, is just as good as finding a work experience you don't like or you do like, because you just, okay, that's off my list. I know that's not for me. Yeah.
Okay, so PLCs we have covered, third year or third level, institutions we have covered, and as part of third level, but kind of a separate thing that some people will be looking at, and a lot of StudyClix users tend to do this, is the HPAT. So I know we'll have a couple of people always asking, you know, tips, or at what point do they have to start doing things if they want to get into medicine and all that. So can you give us sort of a quick summary of the top things to know if you're thinking of doing the HPAT or thinking of going down the medicine route?
Yeah, so 20th of January was the deadline date for the early bird fee of €152.80. They take applicants, yes, it's very specific. They do take applicants up until the 1st of February, but if you apply between the 20th of January and the 1st of February, it's going to cost you €70 more. And then they have an extra late application date from the 1st of February to the 5th of February, and I think that is about €110 more. It's actually on the 20th and 21st of February this year. It's all online this year. Lot of rules. If you're applying for it, make sure you've read the HPAT 2021 book. There's loads of rules. And, you know, a lot of little things could get you in big trouble. Like, they could say, you know, your exam is void if you do a couple of little things that you're not supposed to do. So check out the rules for this year, because it's very different than most other years, because it's online this year.
And that book is available online as well, is it? The HPAT book?
Yeah, it's on the HPAT. If you just type in HPAT Ireland, it'll bring you straight to the website, and that book, it'll be there. It's not even a long read. I think it's like 4 or 5 pages long. So
very good. And what happens for people, let's say they get to April and they decide, oh, I've only just now realised that medicine for me is the only route for them, either something along the PLC route and then do it next year, or just to wait until next year? Is there any options for people who realize later on?
So you'd be surprised the amount of students who actually take the year out to focus on the HBAT. In my first year, I'm going to focus on the Leaving Cert, and I'm going to try and get 600 points. And with that 600 points, I know I'm going to have to get 180 points in the HBAT. So I'm just going to focus on the Leaving Cert here. I'm going to take the year out next year, and I'm going to focus on the HBAT. I know I have to get in the top 10th percentile or 20th percentile, and that's my focus. So people are quite shrewd about it, and they really are calculated in how they're going to approach it. And they don't mind having to use that extra year, because doing the Leaving Cert and the HBAT all in the 1 year is very stressful, is very tough. It's essentially an eighth subject. And some people who are doing apply for medicine already do eighth subjects, so it's essentially a ninth subject then. So I like people who are shrewd about it and don't mind having to put in that extra year. But yeah, that's what you'd have to do if come April you didn't do it. You'd have to wait until the HBAT, because the HBAT is only, you can only do the HBAT the year you're going to start medicine. So you couldn't decide to do it this year in February and say, no, I'm going to apply in September 2022. So you can't do that. It has to be the year you're going to apply for
medicine. That is useful information. Yeah. Okay. Mm. All right, that was all of our kind of our general questions. I put a question box up on Instagram to see if anyone just had any of their own maybe more specific questions that they wanted to ask. So I might just fire those at you now, Tonica, if that's all right. So the first question is, if an entry requirement is described as recommend, does that mean the colleges and or the CEO check if you got the recommended grade as well as the required points?
I think it's just to make life easier for yourself in college. Like, I know veterinary medicine in UCD ask you to have chemistry. That is your requirement. But it's recommended that you do biology as well. You don't have to have biology, but it's recommended. And it just means life will be easier for you on the course if you have Leaving Cert biology as well as Leaving Cert chemistry. But no, you don't actually have to have it. It's just recommended that you have it.
Okay, perfect. Another question is, progression routes from level 7, etc. Is it possible to go from a level 7 to UCD Commerce?
Yes, it would be, yeah. What year you would go into, I don't know. You'd have to contact UCD and ask them. But yeah, it absolutely is. Like, you could be doing a level 6 or 7 in a completely different college and then decide I actually want to switch over to UCD or wherever you want to go. Yes, if there's a place on the course for you, you would contact the program director or the, yeah, and they would try and make a place for you if there is a place there. So was this person talking about business? Business, I think, would be fine. But where there's courses where there's a certain amount of people for health and safety reasons, could be a lot more difficult. So if it's like a science course or something where they can only have 25 there, that might be a bit trickier if nobody has dropped out. But I think for business, yeah, it should be fine.
Okay. A few more questions we got. This person asked, and it might seem like there is an obvious answer, but you might be able to give more details on various different arts courses that there are. And this person asked, I want to be a biology and a Spanish teacher. Is there any way to do that?
Well, that's a tricky one, all right, yeah. Is there any way to do that? Not off the top of my head, there isn't. I know in the likes of Trinity, you can keep up a language as a module. Whether that ends up as a major or minor degree, I'm not too sure. That's a Spanish and biology would be a tricky one to put together.
Would you have to do? Would you be able to do one as your bachelor and one as your master's?
You could, yeah, you could. Then you'd have to do a 2-year PME as well, so the professional master's in education. So that would essentially take you 8 years to become a biology and Spanish teacher.
Okay, so you wouldn't be able to do a PME plus a language, for example, or anything? All in the same 2 years?
No, you'd probably have to do a postgrad at least in it. And the teaching council have to... So say you did your science, the teaching council has to see that you've done a certain amount in your modules to warrant becoming a Leaving Cert teacher in that subject. Like most subjects, like biology is put together with PE in DCU, it's put together with maths in DCU. Be the same in Maynooth University with science education, it's generally biology, maths. So putting a language together would be tricky, but there's probably ways around it, but not off the top of my head, I can't think.
Okay. That was all the questions from Instagram. So I think that's it. Unless, Emer, did you have any last minute questions that you thought of there?
No, I don't know. Well, my question is, can we go back 6 years ago and have Donica as my career guidance? I'd love to know where I would be today if I had had a decent career guidance teacher. to tell me what I should do with my life.
Yeah, well, and it's so different now. Like, one of the first questions students would ask me when they come in for an appointment is, they would ask about Erasmus and study abroad. That's the big ones they always ask. You know, where can I go with this degree? Like, a lot of students want to study in America but realize how expensive it is. They would often pick courses that would give you the opportunity to study for a year over there where you don't have to pay the massive fees. So Erasmus and study abroad is a big thing now as well. I know Trinity College are trying to get the amount of students every year that go on a study abroad to up to 50%. They actually have it at 44% now, which is amazing. So Erasmus is studying in Europe, and study abroad is anywhere outside of Europe. And Erasmus, you actually get paid while you're on your Erasmus. You don't get paid. It's kind of like a grant. So you get like between €290 and €390 a month, depending on what country you go to. Eimear, you did Erasmus, did you?
Yeah, I remember getting that grant, but they sent it all in one go at the start.
Oh,
and
nice.
I was so broke at the start that I just spent it all in the first month and then had nothing else to keep me going for the other 4 months that I was there. But yeah.
And was it priority for you knowing where you were going to go in Erasmus?
It was definitely a big part of choosing my course that I could go abroad, because I knew I wanted to go abroad and I knew I liked languages. And it was always kind of between UCC and UL for me, and I chose UL in the end because they had two abroad options. You know, you have your working abroad and then studying abroad, whereas UCC only had the one, studying abroad, and that's it. So I went for UL in the end because they had the two options, and I'm glad I did in the end. But yeah, it was definitely a huge part for me to know that I could go abroad.
So I'm always surprised. It always really surprises me how that students, a lot of students, pick their courses based on where the study abroad opportunity. And I think that's brilliant. You know, if that's something you really want to do, absolutely go for it. Like, I know Trinity has some partnership with University of Berkeley in California. And like, a student said to me recently, like, imagine getting to stay a winter in California. Like, how nice would that be? Places like San Diego, I know a lot of universities that have partnerships, in DCU as well, they have partnership with San Diego. Can be a lovely winter to be spending in San Diego. So that's a big thing at the minute as well. So yeah, research that if that's something you're really into.
And I would say, if you haven't considered study abroad a lot, or sort of these international opportunities that you can get with courses, definitely look into it. It's such an amazing experience. Even if you don't think, I know loads of people who would have considered themselves maybe homebirds and then would have avoided courses like that, or specifically chosen courses that don't go abroad because they're afraid of it. But I would say never dismiss anything like that. Always consider it, look into it, because it's such a great experience to go abroad and just have that experience in another country. It really gives you a different view.
Absolutely.
And even some universities, you could have the option of only doing a semester, which might suit some people more. That doesn't have to be the full year. So even look into that. If you're a bit intimidated by it, you'd like to go for a short time, not a full year, some universities and colleges offer semesters, which might suit you better.
Exactly. Sounds great. On that point, I might bring up and remind people again that we did do a series of videos with you that we recorded over the summer under various different categories to do with career guidance and the CAO. So one of them was about study abroad, and if you were looking to go to a university in another country, how do you go about that? And there was another one about career guidance for a pandemic, for the times that we're living in. And we're going to be
When we recorded that, actually, we thought it wasn't going to be hugely relevant.
I know, like, yeah, very, this will only be for 2020, and then the minute it turns 2021, it will be gone. And we'll be releasing more videos on YouTube, so be sure to subscribe to StudyClix's YouTube channel so you can keep up to date on those, and they're brilliant videos as well.
Yeah. Otherwise, Donica, do you want to give us another recap of where students can find you and what they can expect?
Yeah, so Leaving Cert Guidance on Instagram and Leaving Cert Guidance podcast. And the podcast is, I was saying it right, it's not because of me is why I think it's great, because I don't actually have much input in the podcast. I just kind of ask questions. But we always have brilliant guests on it. And I think it'll be really beneficial for students who are researching different courses. Like, we had DCU a couple of weeks ago, and they're bringing in 5 new courses in September 2021. And they're so innovative, these courses. It's actually really interesting and might kind of sway some students over to DCU with what they're bringing out. And it's not just DCU. Every college, higher education institute that we have on always have something brilliant to offer that I'm always gobsmacked by the information I get as well. So definitely check out the podcast. I love doing the episodes because I learn so much as well from doing them too. So check that out. That's as brilliant. Well.
And so beneficial to people who, like we discussed, might know what they want to do to really in-depth look at different courses and new ones that they mightn't even have thought existed.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think especially because you always, you know, you hear of your siblings or, you know, people are trying to influence you to do the traditional courses that everyone knows about. That I always felt like I never really knew any of the new courses, or if I looked at them just in the newspaper, wherever they would have popped up, I'm like, okay, I don't know what that is, so I'm just not going to consider it. So
actually,
definitely worthwhile listening to information like that about new courses.
Now that you say it, just new courses, you can get them on the CAO alert list. So if you just type in CAO alert list, it shows all the new courses, and some of the courses actually aren't in the CAO handbook for this year. And those courses generally, now generally, don't quote me on this, are lower on points the first year because they're not in the CAO handbook and nobody's really known about them than they would be in subsequent years. So you could be ahead of the curve there. If you check out CAO alert list, all the different higher education institutes that have new courses coming out will be on that, and you might find a little gem.
Bit of a CAO hack there.
Yeah, exactly. There's a little tip for you.
Amazing. I might just give our little spiel as I always do if you're still listening. If you're not following StudyClix as well on all of our social media platforms, we're on Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, Instagram, and now TikTok. We have a team of 4 people on TikTok now, so it's super fun. You should follow us over there. And if you have time, we would really appreciate a rate and review if you listen to us on Apple Podcasts. Only if it's nice. If I see anything negative, I will cry because I'm very bad at taking criticism. But
constructive criticism we can
constructive take criticism yeah
I can't even take constructive criticism.
If it's anything slightly negative, I don't want to hear it.
Forward it all to Emer at I can take it, just don't send it to Nessa. Yeah, so as Nessa said, do try and give us a review if you have time and a rating. We would love that. And otherwise, we'll be back very soon with some more podcasts. We're hoping to get other lovely guests on, like Donica. And I'm sure we'll hear from Donica again once more deadlines come up in a couple of months. So do not fear. We'll have him back again.
Absolutely. No, I always love coming onto the podcast. It's always very chill and it's a nice chat. And it's nice to just have a nice little chat. And I always love podcasts where you always feel like you're just overhearing the person's conversation. I love a podcast like that. And this is what this feels like.
That's right. I hope that's how people feel, yeah.
And it's so great to have this expert information. I just think, I genuinely feel like, God, I'd be so happy to be a student and hear this. It's just so valuable and straight up and no nonsense. Yeah.
No, and and I'm kind of a no-nonsense person. I get straight to the facts. But I suppose, you know, sometimes guidance counselors get a rough image because a lot of their job now is actually counseling. There's very little time to give career guidance, and most guidance counselors I know are like teaching half a timetable as well as trying to counsel students who are suffering from different mental health issues and then trying to give career advice on top. But I'm very lucky in my school where I do have the opportunity to, you know, do a lot of career guidance, but not everybody's in that position. So, you know, kind of cut them some slack if you can. They're generally really busy, and it's more on the pastoral side of things that they're probably really busy with, and that's probably why you can't access them. But they are very hard to access, aren't
they? Yeah, okay. We'll do our best to be a bit more kind to the career guidance counsellors.
Have you asked your career guidance counsellor how they are today?
Perfect. Okay, well, Donica, thank you so much. We'll cut it off there at the risk of it
being too long.
Thanks,
guys. Enjoyed that. Thank you.
Thanks a million, Donica.
Bye.